It's my pleasure to introduce my esteemed colleague, Dr. Barbara Cherry, and myself. As you might notice here, I'm applying for the APHA, Miss APHA. I'm trying to get the most ribbons. So anyway, all right. So Dr. Barbara Cherry received her Doctor of Nursing Science from the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis, Tennessee. She and I both are alumni together. The majority of her nursing career has been spent in management and administration positions in critical care and nephrology nursing. About 17 years ago, we were lucky that she jumped ship to academia and currently works at Texas Tech Health Science Center School of Nursing. First, she came on board actually as a policy analyst and lead for special projects for the university. She now works for the School of Nursing since 2007. In 2012, she earned the rank of professor in tenure, and she has her certificate and program in healthcare finance for nurse executives. Dr. Cherry has had an opportunity to lead the development of many new initiatives, including the first home dialysis and peritoneal dialysis program in West Texas, eventually becoming one of the largest programs actually in the United States. Dr. Cherry coordinated the project to build a teaching nursing home in Texas Tech campus through a public-private partnership, and she is a member of a small interprofessional leadership team that established the Garrison Institute for Aging, quite an accomplishment. Currently, Dr. Cherry is the Associate Dean of the Department of Leadership Studies and the Garrison Professor in Geriatric Nursing. Her research areas are workforce issues in long-term care facilities and the use of technology and the role of caregivers. Her proudest scholarly achievement is being co-author and editor of Contemporary Nursing Issues, Trends in Management, with the 7th edition in development due to be released in 2013. Her co-author is Dr. Susan Jacob, and really, truly, this textbook has influenced thousands of nursing students, practicing nursing, nurses, and faculty. And now, let me introduce myself. So, I'm Lisa Campbell. I got my Doctor of Nursing Practice in Public Health Nursing from the University of Tennessee, Memphis. I've been a nurse for over 30 years in a variety of practice settings. I held my geriatric nurse practitioner, and I practiced in preventive cardiology. I work for Texas Tech in the School of Nursing. I teach in the Doctor of Nursing Practice program and several courses there. And I have my own consulting business, Population Health Consultants, LLC, where I actually work with local health departments in facilitating community health needs assessment, improvement planning, and strategic planning. And in addition, on my free time, I've been working with my county and trying to move forward a state environmental issue around hydrofracking, which is a big issue in the state of Texas. So that's what I do in my spare time. So let me put this down. So you can give us a warm hand of welcome. And post presentation for Lizette. First, before I begin, Dr. Cherry and I have no disclosures or conflicts of interest to announce to you guys. We didn't receive any funding for this particular activity. This presentation will cut across all disciplines in terms of leadership, but some of our references will be nursing. So we want to analyze, just as a reminder for the objectives, analyze leadership concepts and their relationship to the challenges faced by public health professionals, and explain three key strategies for effective leadership development. So currently, we wanted to give you just kind of a high-level view of the state of emergency preparedness in the United States. We've made tremendous progress since 9/11 on things like cybersecurity, recovering, addressing the needs of those with functional needs of those with disabilities. We've worked really hard on improving state capabilities, and as Lizette actually was referring to the community engagement component and looking at your stakeholders, we've actually done a fairly good job of improving community resilience to then enhance self-reliance within the community, because Lizette was talking about how the disaster begins and ends locally. We really do have to build capacity and resilience within communities. That is how they survive and retool and rebuild afterwards. Oh, oops, I went backwards. Sorry about that. Bing. However, we have room for improvement. One of them, as we know, is to improve our infrastructure, strengthen public-private partnerships, which several of us have had an opportunity to engage in, and really address the needs of the survivor. It is incredibly traumatic to survive any type of a natural or man-made disaster. There's a lot of mental health issues related to that, along with other issues that many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. In addition, we need to really work on funding states to reduce their reliance on federal programs because we really want to maintain the state and local capabilities. Oh, why do I keep going backwards? My finger just gets excited. Sorry about that. Before I talk about the big goal, I'd like to remind everybody for the who was able to attend the opening session where our outgoing president, Joyce Gaffin, spoke. Who was able to attend that? What I'd like to remind everybody in here was that Ms. Gaffin reminded us that leaders should not lose sight of the vision or the goal. And we know in preparedness there's two levels. That's in planning and then when you're in the middle of the emergency. And so when you're in the middle of the emergency, and sometimes we get caught up in the weeds, the leader really has to keep sight of the ultimate goal or vision. So I want to remind you that she also stated the importance of that. But let's look at the big goal of leadership in terms of emergency preparedness. And I'm just going to read this. We want to have a secure and resilient nation with capabilities required across the whole community, as Lizette talked about, to prevent, protect against, mitigate, respond to, and recover from the threats and hazards that pose the greatest risk. So you as a leader in your community should keep this big goal at the forefront as you're helping mobilize to address these natural or man-made disasters. So Barbara and I want to engage you just, whoops, what did I do? Where did it go? I'm going back. Why does my finger do? You know what? I think it's Louisiana. It must be these beads I have on. I don't know what's going on with me. It's my Mardi Gras beads. It got me excited. Maybe I should take them off. So what we want to ask you about, and I'm going to ask Barbara maybe to write a couple of notes to jot this down because we don't have a microphone for you guys. What do you consider leadership competencies required to advance emergency preparedness in the United States? If I could have a few hands, Lizette? Communication skills. What else? For leadership. Yes, ma'am. Ability to make decisions. And Lizette referred to that. What else? Authority. Right. Okay. What else? Yes. Collaboration skills. What else? Yeah. Ability to inspire. Okay. Anybody else? One or two more? Yes, ma'am. Competence of your particular knowledge. So irrespective of your discipline, you should be competent in your knowledge base. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. A vision. Okay, a vision. Okay. All right. So I'm going to go right now. So let's think about what you guys wrote down. Let me remind you of what you wrote down, or what you said. So what you said is that leaders should have good communication skills. Leaders should be able to make decisions. And also leaders should have the authority to make the decisions. Leaders should have collaboration skills. Leaders should inspire. Leaders should have competency in their respective profession. And leaders should have a vision. Yes, you got one more? You want to write that down? Okay, so ability to adapt or change. What else? The ability to listen. Okay. Yeah, I would have to say that you got 100%, pretty much. So before I talk about what the literature tells us about leadership competencies, especially in the planning and the response to emergencies, let me just remind you of what leadership is defined as. It's a process by where an individual can move a group toward a goal or a vision. The individual, and along with that, that individual has to be able to empower and inspire. So let me have the list. So let's look at actually what the literature does say. The literature, the one thing that we didn't discuss but you kind of alluded to is that a leader really has to have a high emotional intelligence, which really becomes a balancing measure in the face of a crisis or in the time of a crisis. A leader should clearly have good communication skills because you want to reduce fragmentation of information. And a leader should participate in the planning and lead the planning. And there's different kinds of leadership that occurs in the planning stage and also in the crisis stage. And we found that in the literature, and that'll be in your references. As well as, and our outgoing president mentioned this as well, leaders should be adaptable, flexible, and so really that's an agile leader. They need to be an agile leader. So, Dr. Cherry, you want to come up here? I'm going to let Dr. Cherry and I are going to pitch it together.
Yes. Okay, and I realize we are standing between you and lunch, probably. So you guys really hit the nail on the head with all of the leadership attributes. Can you hear me okay that you talked about? Here's some. There was a great article by Dietschman. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. His characteristics were related to leadership characteristics required in the actual moment of crisis, which are different. If you're looking at leadership for planning, you have some characteristics. When you look at leadership for the crisis management, it's another. His was decisiveness, situational awareness, coordination, communication, and inspiring trust. Because in the middle of that crisis, you want somebody you can trust. But it also, it very much carries over when you're planning, doing emergency preparedness planning, you do have to have that person that you trust. Communication, I cannot tell you how, I have a very dear colleague who was the CNO at Dallas Presbyterian. He's still the vice president of nursing at Dallas Presbyterian, where the Ebola patient came in and where they had all the events. And he was talking, I talked to him last week, and he was talking about the whole media issue and how it I think in when we talk about planning the infrastructure that we need to work on, we really have to at some point engage the media in how they're responding because they made it so difficult for them to handle the care. He said they had media personnel coming into the emergency room and faking illnesses to get into the ER to talk to the staff and the people and see what was going on. They were chasing, when a nurse would leave her shift to go home, if they saw them in uniform, they were chasing them to their cars. They were getting the cell phone numbers of the family members and their children and calling them. I mean, it just gives me chills what they were dealing with in the midst of trying to really provide excellent care. And so I think at some point we have to have this whole media conversation about how they're going to behave you know, at some point as we face these disasters, because that complicated things 1,000 times over when they were dealing with the Ebola crisis. The media was just crazy. So one thing I always like to point out about leadership is what leadership is not. And if you see this happening, if you're saying these things or if they're happening in your organization, well, then this person is not a leader. If it says, well, somebody should do something, just like I'm standing up here, somebody should do something about the media. But I think at some point I do hope maybe to work with Cole and maybe help him co-author an article about how we start engaging the media in appropriate responses and appropriate ways to support emergency responses. Nobody will listen. Oh, it'll never happen here. We've tried that before. And my all-time least favorite is I'm just a nurse. And that right there, well, we've got some data. Nurses are the most trusted profession in the United States. We all know that. And so we can inspire that trust. We also have a very powerful voice when we choose to use it. So we have to know that being a nurse is a very important leadership role. So what leadership is: asking questions, finding answers, taking the initiative to address complex situations, just like Claire in the first presentation this morning. She knew there was a huge issue with APRNs not being able to practice to their full extent when Hurricane Katrina happened. And so through these years, they've worked on this very complex issue and have some answers. They're continuing to work, but it took her leadership and the leadership of people within the state to step up and say, this is an infrastructure issue. When we have an emergency, we need to get these APRNs certified quickly. The Board of Nursing needs to be there. It needs to all happen very fast, and we have to have the right rules in place. And so she was able to work on that and make that happen. Building relationships. If I could tell you any other thing that you could start doing right now for leadership development, it's going to be around building relationships with people in your community so that you know who to call on and where the expertise is. Practicing mindfully. This is just all about thinking about what we're doing, having conversations with people, just like the conversation I had with Dr. Cole Edmondson, the Vice President of Nursing at Dallas Presbyterian, about the media and how complex that made handling the whole situation, how much more complex it made, that somehow we've got to give that some deep thought and how do we get the media on our side versus not on our side. Leading and supporting positive change. And another key component of leadership is knowing your own leadership development needs. And that's really where we're going to focus the rest of the conversation on. How are we doing on time? 6 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So just to know that nurses, I know that many people in here are nurses. Some of you are not nurses, but we focus this a little bit around nursing. We have to practice to the full extent of our education and training and be full partners with physicians and other health professionals. This comes from the Institute of Medicine. They recognize that nurses have the knowledge base and the expertise to be full partners in all of these major healthcare decisions and planning and crisis management, everything that happens in to take care of communities. Nurses can be full partners. And then opinion leaders rank nurses as having the knowledge and skills needed to have a great deal of influence on key elements of quality health care. We do not, this same report Hasmiller and colleagues put out, we do not use that influence to the fullest extent that we should, is what the report says, but that we will be listened to and trusted, and we can be those leaders as nurses to really make a difference to help expand and improve public health, community health, healthcare in general. Okay, so public health nursing, if we focus specifically on public health nursing, since that's the purpose of this presentation and so many of you are here, we're not going to have as much time as I want to spend talking about this, but I think if I point out one of the key things is that as a public health nurse, you have ethical principles that are stated by the Public Health Leadership Society, and you need to know those and keep those in the forefront of your thoughts as you move forward in decision-making and planning and being a leader in public health nursing. So we're going to talk about how do you personally, as an individual, do some leadership development. First of all, I personally like leadership assessments Some people don't, but I think it just gives you it's not always completely accurate about yourself, but it does give you a little bit of a guide. It gives you some areas to think about and how can I look at my own practice as a nurse, as a leader, and how do I develop myself? Because the best thing we have to give to public health and improving public health and improving our communities is our own personal, just what we bring to the table as an individual and as a leader. And you can learn a lot about yourself by looking at some of these individual assessments. So all of these are available. Will they get these slides? These slides will be available.
We've uploaded the slide deck in APHA. You can go into the session and these slides are available.
So any of these, you'll have the resources, but just starting with a leadership assessment of yourself. And there's many others, but these are some of our favorites that we use. We use them on some of our students, which some of our former alumni that I see in the room. Another key thing is to build your power base. And if you guys remember, probably in your nursing, early nursing, leadership, any kind of leadership and management courses, you learned about types of power. There's just expert power. You're viewed as an expert. So if you're an expert clinical nurse, that gives you some power. There's relationship power. If you have, say, you have a really good relationship with the medical director of the facility, that gives you a little bit of power, whether you're the chief nurse or just a regular staff nurse, you've got some power because of that relationship. So you need to understand what are the sources of power that you have, and how do you align yourself with other sources of power? How do you get engaged with powerful people in your community that can help make a difference and give the authority when you want to make those decisions? Another thing is to become a recognized expert. I know one of the articles Lisa and I read when we developed this was asking how many people have there's a National Incident Management System certification. How many of you, does anybody have that? A few of you in the room. Okay, great. So that gives you a certain amount of power. You are certified in incident management, and so that's a type of power, and it makes you a recognized expert. People are going to go to you because of that certification. Okay, know your community. Know who the leaders in your community. It might be the director of the Red Cross. The YMCA has a lot of facilities. Who's the community board for the YMCA or YWCA? Your emergency management system, the emergency coordinator in your local hospital. So you need to know your community, the federal, state, and local resources available. And we have the excellent presentation about that. Know what the literature is telling you about emergency management. And then there's a self-assessment you can do, the Public Health Preparedness and Response Core Competencies from the American Public Health Nurses Association. So you can assess yourself on these competencies. Okay, and one thing I really think everybody should have is a leadership development plan as an individual. Regardless of where you are, you can still always continue to advance your leadership skills and to continue to be that leader that you learn from your practice and that you continue to grow and develop. So your leadership development plan, the one I've proposed, is that it has four parts. You identify your leadership strengths, which you can do from some of those assessments. You identify your professional development opportunities. What opportunities do you have to develop your leadership strengths? You have some measurable goals and an action plan. And I'm actually going to give you an example. So let's say you really are very interested in becoming more involved in emergency preparedness in your community, and you want to develop, your goal is to develop your long-range planning skills. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, if you can position yourself in some community project to work on a new project, and then actually lay out how you would do goals, objectives, and tasks for this project and have it reviewed by a mentor or somebody that you view as very skilled in planning. So you have this goal, and then you have an action plan, and as you do these things, you really do develop these skills that you'll be viewed as a leader. Another goal might be to build a network of local community leaders. So to do that, what's your action plan? You're going to join local organizations such as a business club or the Rotary. You can identify key leaders in the community and identify opportunities to meet them. Maybe it's at the school board meeting or the city council. But so this just gives you an example of how to write a leadership development plan, but you want to get very specific so that there's things that you can actually do. Thank you. This all actually, this comes, what we presented here on leadership development is from this book. It's called For Your Improvement, and I actually brought it along because it's such an excellent book. Do people, does anybody, I see some people smiling, you haven't had it.
We'll have it up here for you to look at after.
So, well, actually, I'm going to have to take it because I've got to get to the airport.
Oh,
unless
okay.
You want to bring it to me. You're going to be here.
It.
You can bring
I
it.
Can bring
okay.
It.
So it just gives you all kinds of, so it gives you things like boss relationships, business acumen, career ambition, caring about direct reports, command skills, compassion, conflict management. It just gives you all kinds of very specific areas that you might want to use for leadership development. And then it tells you what, it gives you ideas for this action plan. Say you want to get better at conflict management. You're very uncomfortable with conflict management. So how do you improve in that leadership skill? Because that's a key skill as a leader, is to be able to manage conflict. How do you do that? And this gives you some great examples. So this is a book you probably all should have. It's just a good book. It's not like I'm getting any kind of...
I don't know part of the company.
Another thing is one of the last things we'll talk about. Lisa's going to wrap up here for us, but is to read leadership books. And one of my favorite on here is Crucial Conversations. It is an outstanding book on how to have good conversations. So Crucial Conversations. There's also another one by the same authors called Crucial Confrontations. But there's so many different books that you can pick up. Some of them may not be as meaningful to you, but some of them will be very meaningful and you'll get your own. But I really do encourage reading good leadership books. Finally, get involved, and Dr. Campbell's going to talk about that because she is the expert at getting involved.
Thank you, Dr. Cherry. She is right. I am pretty involved. I think what I'd like to end with, we've had a lot of phenomenal information from Claire and Lizette and Dr. Cherry, but I think one of the main things, and we've heard it throughout the presentations, there's been a theme woven through all the presentations, is that it's very important to establish meaningful, trusting relationships before you need to engage with your partners when there's an emergency or disaster. It's also very important, as Dr. Cherry was talking about, your leadership development plan, to purposefully, intentionally practice your leadership skills before you need them. It's all part of emergency preparedness. And finally, I'd like to say it's very important for you to attend and engage in meetings locally, whether they're local, regional, or state or national meetings. Be engaged in boards, public health boards, hospital boards, anything, regional planning meetings, so that you can really be at the table. It's really phenomenal. Your perspective may really change a strategic plan or planning within the community for emergency preparedness, and that's really important. You want to be known as a trusted, reliable individual. And so what I'd like to say in closing in terms of a leader, if you say you're going to do something, do it. Do what you say you're going to do, because that helps people really trust and rely on you. I think that's really important.